97.1 FM Talk. On demand audio.
And I'm Ryan Recker filling in for Mark Reardon. Wow, what a big hour we have here, I gotta say. Joining us now is an actor and comedian. I think pretty much everyone knows who he is. He also has a book that came out not that long ago called You Can Do It, Speak Your Mind, America. Rob Schneider, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Rhino. Thanks for having me, brother.
I am very excited. I think that we're in a weird time in American history because
Yes. We
take for granted free speech. I think you can look at other countries. You can look at Canada. You can look at England as examples of, okay, we're kind of similar lifestyles in a way, like with Canada, where there are neighbors. But you can see what happens when you take free speech away. And you can see how they punish their people, how the government can target people. And you, wow, that's a precious thing America has. It is a really important thing to speak your mind, isn't it?
Well, no, it's absolutely. There's a reason why, you know, George Washington and our founding fathers wanted it first and of our, you know, the Bill of Rights and our first amendment is free speech. And it's no coincidence that that is one of the cornerstones of, I think, why America continues to be the creative, technological, and, you know, financial capital of the world, because it allows for debate, it allows for contentious debate, and it allows for creativity. And you don't get creativity, you don't get smooth from smooth, you get it from friction. And so, you know, one thing has been under threat is debate and discourse. And it's the Democratic majority, which was more than happy to squelch debate recently, and, you know, kind of hide behind the illusion of tolerance, and, you know, which is just redressed communism that you can label woke. What it really was a way to diversity, was a way to and DEI was a way to demand conformity and demand power and control. That's really what it was. So free speech is essential, because we need to have the best ideas, and the worst ideas, even if they're horrible, they need to be aired. And so that you can say, well, those are terrible ideas. The idea of who gets to decide what language, even if it's called hate speech or what, I mean, the idea of free speech is to protect the speech, if it means anything, is to say something that somebody else could find, could be repulsed by or completely disagree with. And then, you know, it isn't to say, like, you know, when Stephen Colbert, he got his show canceled recently, free speech isn't free from consequence, but what free speech must be about in the United States of America is to not have reprisals from your government, and to be able to continue to seek redress. And that was something that when the Biden administration has been proved, what they did was, and it wasn't Biden, obviously, because his brain didn't work anymore, but they were silencing Americans, and they were absolutely, you know, not wanting any dissent. So the Biden administration was dipping its toes into totalitarianism, authoritarianism, and tyranny. And what I think of the Trump administration is not a revolution; it is a counter-revolution to the insanity that that we have been besieged with in this country. And that's why it was so important for people to step up and then to demand change, which was good. I mean, I still think that. You know, when I went to the airport this morning, I had to show my ID. When I went to FedEx, I had to show my identification to mail, you know, a small package. Mm-hmm. And yet they don't want you to do that in many Democratic states to vote. And I think that's for the express purpose of cheating. And that has to stop. And people have seen through that now. And it's no coincidence that the Democrats have lost the Supreme Court, the House of Representatives, the Senate, and now the White House. And if they want to become part of a normal, party, which is what we need. We need two normal political parties that function. Then they're going to have to stop this authoritarian toe dip.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned the Colbert thing. I think the lesson for that is, if you're losing $40 million a year, it's probably a bad idea to tell your employer they're stupid with a lot of explicit words attached to it. It's probably a bad idea.
I think so. Yeah. Well, here's what Colbert did. Colbert, I mean, he was already. It's like if you think of a pizza, he's already throwing half the pizza in the garbage. So he's just literally starting with half a pizza. And then that half a pizza is all Greg Gutfeld. He gets it all to himself. And then the pizza that the half a pizza left over, he's got to share with two other guys. So it's a third, third, and third for half a pizza. So he's dealing with one slice of the whole pie.
Oh,
and this is not enough money. He's got 200 employees, and he lost losing money, and then he craps on his employees and his employer. That's just a bad strategy to continue to try to make $20 million a year.
You know, and I remember in talking about some of the late night people, one of my favorite was Conan. And I remember when Conan was paying out of pocket his staff, and I thought, okay, Colbert, just there's 200 people, you're losing money, but there's a lot of people working on it that are going to be out of a job soon because you just thought it was a good idea to crap on your employer. I mean, there's a lot of consequences to that.
It is. There is. And I hope that that's a spanking that that other people will notice, you know, you know, I mean, look, I'm sure he's going to be able to squeak by with the $100 million that he has left.
Yeah.
I'm not feeling sorry for him.
Well, let's talk about the Shroud of Turin. There's a conference coming to St. Louis. You're going to be a part of it. What's your fascination with the Shroud of Turin?
Well, first of all, it's a reawakening of faith for me and for so many others, because what you really have is the pieces of cloth, the Egyptian cloth that it was Jonathan of was it Aramea that who had this and asked for this for the body to be wrapped in this Egyptian cloth. That's the only reason it survived. It's the only cloth that could have survived was linen, and you have this you know, that it was tested, and it was tested in the lower left hand corner by three different carbon labs that did the carbon dating. And the further that they went into the shroud material, the further back in time it went. The earliest was, I believe, 1170, but it was from 1190. I think from 1370 to 1190. But what happened was they never put into question what Joe Marino and Susan Benford discovered, was that the French nuns repaired this over years with this invisible thread. Invisible weave, and that was what they. So that's what threw the carbon dating off, and so now with the radiation testing, they were able to test that it really is a 2,000-year-old cloth. So what you have in this piece of cloth, which has blood in it, it has the exact wounds from that Jesus Christ suffered on the cross. And you see, they've been able to test blood. They've been also to get pollen off of this that is only comes from that part of Jerusalem. So it's an incredible thing. What really it is the best description I've ever heard of it was that the Shroud of Turin is the receipt of what Jesus Christ paid for all of us. And it is the greatest gift ever in the world.
You know, can I tell you my problem with it? And I think about it because I'm a Christian, and I think, okay, if I were to try to tie my faith into an object, I would think, okay, it would be awesome if it was real, and it would be fantastic to have an artifact like that exist. But I also worry, what if one day it does come back into question? I don't want my faith to be in question because I tied so much into this object.
Well, first of all, we have to go by the definition of faith. You know, a cloth or a piece of paper or whatever it has, whether it's even if it's a piece of the cross, these are just artifacts. They're not – they don't express the or begin to – tell the story of faith, which is faith is a willingness to not know, but to proceed anyway. But it shouldn't impact us, and we shouldn't worship a piece of cloth or any item. But what it does is there's an image on there, which I believe, if you look at the human being, when the fertilization begins, there's a flash of light, and whether they can relate that to some sort of zinc oxide explosion, the chemical thing. I believe that when Jesus Christ came back to life, that's what sent that reverse negative onto this piece of cloth. Now,
that's amazing.
And it can only be done in that when it was wrapped in something and it was a negative. If it was something that medieval forgery, why would this guy do something that was an inversion of a negative when photography wouldn't be invented for another 500 years? So I think it's an important thing that we don't get lost in artifacts and worship this and have our faith in anything other than the living, breathing Savior, Jesus Christ. And that is really, really an important thing, Ryan, to bring up, because it is it isn't a cloth that was provides salvation. I mean, the most beautiful thing my priest, Father Pasco, told me, he said, even the cold air that the baby Jesus suffered on the night of his birth is enough suffering for our own salvation. And it's just a beautiful gift and the payment that was made. And but what I think it can do is I think it can provide something as we've all experienced in this dark age that we are encountering now, and a rise of evil, which I think we can plainly see it, whether since the pandemic and the flirtation with global tyranny that we were dealing with. I think there is a rise in evil in the world. And I think at that same time, it's no coincidence that I think there's also a rise in faith. And I think there's a number of young people coming to the faith now. It's very encouraging. And I don't think that's by accident. I think this is an intended time. And I think we will be, there will be tough times ahead. And I think if you, you know, I mean, I would say that what my father, Chad Ripperger, said, which I take great solace in, Jesus already won. This is just a mop-up mission.
Yeah, but you're going to be...
We're going to have some tribulations. There'll be some times to come, which will be very difficult for a lot of people.
So you'll be part of the conference here in St. Louis, Shroud, 2025conference.com. Yes. It's July 31st through August 2nd. I don't know how much time you have, if you have another interview to do. I had one other question that I was hoping to ask you, but if you have to go, I understand too.
What's that?
It was old Norm MacDonald story that I've heard, and I was hoping you can tell me if it's true or not.
All right, tell me.
All right, I heard Norm MacDonald tell the story back in SNL that George Harrison visited once, was playing some guitar, and Al Franken came out and said, "Cut that music out, we're trying to work here." And Norm MacDonald said, "Are you kidding me? We had like a private concert from George Harrison, and Al Franken, being a joker, cut it out." Is there any truth to that story?
That is a true story, but Norm wasn't there.
Oh, he wasn't. He just told the story, but he wasn't there.
This was back. He told the story. He wasn't there, but there was a story that Al Franken did do that. He just as a joke to him, but you know, George Harrison didn't think of it as a joke.
Oh,
George Harrison was just horrified by that and like uncomfortable. And that kind of sums up Al Franken's what he thinks is funny, as opposed to other people are horrified by it. You know, and Al is funny, but he also is capable of frightening people like he did in that moment to a very tender soul who's no longer with us. But that's a true story. But no, Norm wasn't there. That happened in the late 70s, early 80s.
Right. Well, I've heard the story. I got to tell you, I've heard the story. I've never seen it published anywhere, so I've always was curious if it was true or not. So I'm so glad
that's
I can learn
true
that.
Story. And that's from Jim Downey. He's the head writer of SNL and the real genius of SNL, the creative comedy writer, Jim Downey. He's unbelievable. And that's a true story. That is... That's one of my stories that I have in the back of my head too. That I, you know, it's like, wow, incredible place. But that's the thing about Saturday Night Live. We had some of the most amazing people would be able to come through there, and it would be a real, you know, one day, you know, I'm you know, running around, changing my into the next sketch, changing my clothes, and then all of a sudden you see Neil Young, you know, he's playing Harvest Moon.
Yeah.
Neil Young, and I'm gonna say, you know what, I'm gonna stop and I'm gonna hear this, and I don't care if I'm late for the next sketch. This is the moment I want to just take in right now. So that's
before cell phones.
Beautiful thing.
Yeah, that's the things you can enjoy, you know, before you thought, oh, I better record this real quick. No, you get to live in the moment. So enjoy St. Louis. We'll be so happy to have you here. Rob Schneider, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate
it. Thank you. I appreciate it. We'll look forward to seeing you then. Take care now.